Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What? El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We look forward to this moment every single week, every Tuesday at 5 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more. We bring in the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, on with us. Hello, Michael.
You bet you look forward to it.
You're darn right we do. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
We're good. We're good. You know, just waiting for things to take place in the world of sports. And, you know, little by little, it looks like things are starting to loosen up a bit. I've seen different stories out there. The idea in Texas that they're saying they're going to allow sporting events where they could have 25% capacity. And, you know, maybe other cities may take a cue from them there. What do you think we're going to see ultimately? I know, you know, the virus is different in different states. It's much more serious in some states than others. How do you think this plays out? Do you think it should be everybody should be on the same playing field, so to speak, in that, well, if Seattle can't have fans, then you shouldn't be allowed to have fans in Texas? Or do you think it should just be unique to each state?
Absolutely not. I mean, it should be unique to each state. There's no way you can say if this one can't have it, this one can't have it also. I believe that we should be going by what the states say, and even more than that, what the counties, what the cities say. I'm in a state where if you go west from Philadelphia, you can go to get your hair cut, go to the gym, eat dinner at a restaurant, you know, distanced and masks and a lot of precautions. But where I am, until Friday, we can't do anything. We can go to the supermarket, the hardware store, and the drugstore, and that's about it. So you have to make sure that the people who are making the decisions on the broad scale are saying this is what's best for overall safety. Then athletic pursuits and other things can work off of that. But you know, if some place can go 50% capacity and some place goes without fans, that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, it seems like, you know, that for the guys that go through the wall first, you know, the old saying, first guy through the wall gets bloody. And at least for the NFL, which is, we all know, is the most important league, Michael, they at least have a chance to kind of, you know, figure out some of the trial and error things that are going to go on, because there's probably going to be some things that are very negative, you know, and there are going to be some good positive things, hopefully more than negative. But at least for the NFL, it feels like they're going to have a pretty good shot at getting it as right as you can get it anyway.
Yes, but you know, the problem with all this, and I read an article today, you know, you've got a lot of young people, and I say young, anybody under 30 remains young, who are in very good shape, who are going to maybe get this and be asymptomatic. But that doesn't mean they can't pass it on to other people. And that doesn't mean that even some of the people who are, you know, young and in great shape aren't going to get it, and it's not going to manifest itself in a bad way. This is everybody's taking a calculated risk here. And, you know, everybody's feeling a little more secure now. You're starting to see more people come out. You're starting to see small gatherings. A couple gets together with another couple here on the back deck because it's warm. And that's great. But we have no idea what these protests are going to mean in terms of public health, where everybody is so close together, so packed together. Do we have a spike in a lot of these cities that precludes some of this getting together to watch sporting events down the line?
El Hombre, with everything that's going on with the NFL, they're missing OTAs, they're not being able to see guys. Should fans lower their expectation of the quality of football that's going to be out there if it resumes? Should they expect a JV-type game, or do you think that these teams will still perform at a high level?
First of all, Michael, 195 career receptions. Wasn't that a school record when you graduated?
At the time, I got running backs killing that record now.
I know, but still, that's pretty good. Anyway, I wouldn't lower my expectation. What I would say is it may take a little while for things to get revved up, but there's going to be good play. You've got veterans out there too. You know, people are going to get into shape in training camp. I think what you're going to see is maybe the exhibition games, if they're played, are going to mean a lot more. because you're going to have players who have to get a little sharper. So you may not see games 1 and 4 basically be scrubathons. You may see the varsity play a little longer in number one, and they may even step onto the field for game number 4 rather than just sitting there and watching the last guys to be, you know, trying to make the roster. So I think that if I'm a coach, once I can get the work, you know, get to work, I'm going to say, all right, we're going to do as much contact as we can. We're going to do, you know, a little bit of an old style training camp as much as we're allowed. But then the games, we're going to see the better players play a little more.
Michael, we were talking earlier about DeSean Jackson making the comment that, hey, if, you know, there are going to be no fans, mic the players up, give the fans something. And that's something that we had talked about before. It would be awesome. Now, language is a concern for everybody, obviously, so there would be some people that wouldn't be in favor of that. Is there a way they could make that work? We were talking about, well, maybe they could do it on the Red Zone or, you know, a cable channel, but then, you know, I could see CBS or somebody saying, well, hang on a minute. We paid all this money for the rights, and now people are going to tune to that network so they can hear the, you know, the cursing and hear what's going on the field, so maybe that doesn't work. Could you think of a way where fans could have access, players are mic'd up, and we're getting a chance to hear something really unique that works for everybody?
No. You know what the game we could do that in? BYU, Utah, right? All right, you know, they're not even allowed to drink soda, so they're not going to be swearing and saying stuff about people's families. There is no way that you can let an NFL game, the sound on that game, be used live and not censored. NFL, I would have loved to see what NFL Films has to go through to get just some of the snippets that they do in their highlight packages and year-end, you know, recaps of teams and big games. Here's the problem. A lot of what is said in these situations is not only profane, it is wildly politically incorrect. And if you allow that to be used and somebody starts saying something that is, you know, shouldn't be said in society, but is said in an athletic setting, you could end up with a lot of players becoming pariahs, with a lot of yeah. people turning their back and saying, oh my goodness, that was said, this goes on. I think I can see no way of doing it unless the only people you're going to mic up are the people for whom the strongest oath they're going to utter is pshaw.
Philip Rivers, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What does he have, like 15 yeah, that, children or something?
Yeah, but he's one of the biggest trash talkers in the league, but never uses a curse word, apparently. That's his
yeah, exactly.
claim
so, I mean, that's great. But I mean, what are you going to do? Some guy's trying to knock somebody else's head off. They're highly keyed up, charged up. Somebody does something they don't like. What are you expecting them to say? I take offense with that. No, there's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah, I had a guy tell me after, oh, by the way, you know, you've never quoted my stats, Michael. You know, Bumpus comes on and, oh, you're throwing all of his stats out there. I know it's because mine are boring,
them.
But it was too long ago.
Two recovered fumbles or something.
Yeah.
Not like you recovered.
No, those were his interceptions.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, Michael, I do have to let you know that he did pick off Dan Marino. So
nice.
Let's not sleep on that.
Well, I'll tell you a great Dan Marino story in that vein. Mike Mayock, now the general manager of the Las Vegas Raiders, went to the Haverford School with me, in case you didn't know that. He graduated 3 years before. He said one time he was at one of these, you know, athletes golf tournaments or something. He walks up to Marino. He played at Boston College. Marino, of course, played at Pitt. And he said, hey, Dan, Mike Mayock. And Dan's like, hey, how you doing? He goes, you know, I picked you off in college. And Marino just looked at him and said, if I had a dollar for everybody who told me who picked that they picked me off, I wouldn't be playing right now. So, you know, and Mayock laughs at that. And he said, I really did. But, you know, everybody's trying to say they picked off Dan Marino. He took a lot of chances.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I saw a thing at the Combine a few years ago when he wasn't Mayock wasn't working for, you know, for the Raiders at that point.
Right.
He was an analyst on NFL. And so he was talking about it and everybody had the monitor on and they showed a close up of Marino and they showed that interception and Marino like throws his hands up like, how many times are you going to bring this up, man? But speaking of, you know, not being
great stuff,
not. Yeah, and I ran into Dan like at a bar a couple of years ago when they were in town, and I said hi to him. I did not say anything about picking him off, so I just thought that would be cheesy.
Classy,
yeah,
classy.
But Yeah, but speaking of not having guys mic'd up, I mean, I don't know how much you've seen of Marino. I just, every time I picture that guy, I picture his face red and him screaming at his receivers. And, you know, I would think a lot of these guys would be like, hey, man, I don't want, like you said, the political incorrectness stuff, but there's lots of screaming and yelling that goes on the sidelines. And, you know, there was a big deal here in Seattle. Everybody made a big deal out of, you know, Sherman screaming and yelling at coaches. I mean, that stuff's been going on for years, and now we're all paying so much attention to it. That could be something where I could see the players would get together and the coaches too and just go, yeah, I really don't want people knowing what, you know, what we're, because I don't think they can handle it.
Well, and the other thing is, it is an absolute highly charged situation where people are trying to win under significant pressure, and everybody's got, you know, there's the people that just want to win the game, right? But then there's the people, if they're not performing and not getting the ball enough, then maybe not get the next contract. You've got people who are fighting through injuries. You don't want to hear what the people are saying in the heat of the battle. It could be something that flares up for 5 seconds. People get upset, and then afterwards the guy walks past, pats him on the back, says, hey, man, sorry about that, or we're cool, or whatever. You're right. You can't have – it just won't work. Unless you're doing stuff like where you're showing it after the fact, after they've sanitized it and scrubbed it, you have to dip the whole game in hand sanitizer in order to be able to get these guys to have mics on them, because it's going to turn out to be way too blue.
Ombre, this offseason we saw the Bucks just make the most high profile move during the offseason, getting Tom Brady. So I'm excited to see them play. Haven't wanted to see them play since work done back in the day. Is there any other team in the NFL that you're excited to see this season?
I'm not that excited to see the Bucks. I talked to somebody who was saying that, you know, you look at Brady's 2019 season. First of all, he completed 60% of his passes, which is like either the second or third lowest in his career. His passer rating was one of the lowest that he registered. You can say that he didn't have the receivers all you want. He's not going to have an offensive line in front of him. I don't know how great he is right now. People forget he's 43. Okay, it's going to go quickly, and I just wonder whether or not I'd like to be sitting there with the wherewithal to take these bets that people are putting down on the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl, because it's not going to happen. I don't care if you got Brady and Gronk and you go back and get Rodney Harrison. Get the whole gang together. You know, get everybody. Jim Nantz, you know, and I don't mean the guy on the, hello, friends. I'm talking about the great Patriots running back from the 60s and 70s. Get the whole band back together. It's a seniors tour right now. And I would imagine it's also going to be like a MASH unit in the locker room trying to get Gronk ready. They're going to have to get replacement parts.
Oh, well, I hold out a little more hope for his success there. Has he become any more likable to you? I don't know where you were at with him before, but being away from Belichick is, I've softened my stance on Brady. I don't know why. I think he came off well in the golf matchup with Tiger and Phil and Peyton Manning. He just, maybe just being out of New England and away from Belichick makes him more palatable. Does it change anything for you?
He's a Michigan man. I can't hate him.
Oh, that's right. God, how do I forget that?
I can't say anything too bad about Dreamy Tom. I mean, he played for the Patriots. He was a heck of a quarterback. And you know something? As much as you give – and look, the Deflategate thing, contemptible, Belichick cheating, the whole thing. Two of them are at the top of their professions, all right? You know, Brady's the best quarterback ever. Belichick's one of the three or four best coaches of all time. So, you know, I guess I've gotten – older and realize that I try to respect players and people who do things great. Now, I still loathe the horrible people from Columbus, and you'll never get me to really say, oh, geez, love those Cowboys. But it's still, you know, you got to respect what he's done. And as I said, you know, he wore the maize and blue. What can I do?
All right, Michael, what's the what's the worst scandal? Is it the Deflategate, or is it not Spygate? What was the Bountygate? Bountygate and Deflategate. Which was more severe?
About Deflategate. Absolutely. I mean, Bountygate. People have been giving out money forever. I remember one time I heard an NFL player say, you know, why do you want to get like $100 in a bounty? You're making hundred. This was back before everybody was making $10 million. You're making hundreds of thousands of dollars in your salary. He said, what is $100 for knocking a kicker on his butt or doing this or that mean? He goes, that's $100 my wife doesn't know I have. So I mean,
yeah. There you go.
So, I mean, that's the thing. I sat in an NBA locker room one time, and one player walks up to another, goes, "Yeah, I'm going to this car dealership on Saturday. Listen, man, you want to come along at personal appearance?" He's like, "Yeah, how much am I going to get?" He goes, "Yeah, $500." He's like, "Oh, yeah, that's cool. Cash, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, cash." It's like, so these guys got to remember, we're all gangsters. So the flight gate was far worse because it impacted a game. The bounty gate, it's just a little bit of money changing hands. Keep your head on a swivel so you don't get clobbered.
All right, Sean Tago, I got a question for you.
Yo,
here we go.
I've been Sean Tago since 2007. I don't want to hear it.
See, now you got to tell Bumpus what it is because he was egged on to call you that, and it's Sean Tago. He doesn't know what it is.
Sean Tago, okay.
All right, every Thanksgiving, my buddies and I, this game is now 45 years old. Goes back to the mid-70s, and my buddies and I play a touch football game on Thanksgiving. It's the Turkey Bowl. We gave out a pink toilet seat. We give out a pink toilet seat to the least valuable player on the losing team as voted by the winners. And I have not been Sean Tago since 2007, so I don't want to hear it.
Okay, see,
you're still playing
for the story.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, and you sound like my wife.
I'm ashamed.
Every Thanksgiving I put on the Michigan game pants that we appropriated in 1983. Still fit, by the way. Put on a jersey, nice. You know, the cleats, and head out there and play.
Little eye black as well.
Oh, absolutely. You got to. The best was the year that when Bosworth was putting all that stuff in his hair, one of my buddies took a jelly donut and started putting jelly donut stripes in his hair so he could look like the
Oz. That's great.
You know, receivers, we're divas. We like the ball. We like the attention. And lately, you know, guys are coming out and they're claiming to be the best receiver in the NFL. Who do you think is the best receiver right now in the NFL?
Michael Thomas. I hate to say it because he is from the horrible school, but he's the man. Mr. Hopkins is pretty darn good too, but I'll take Michael Thomas.
Hey, Michael, you're an old school NBA fan, right?
Oh, you better believe it.
I was just reading that. I just saw this headline. I don't know when it happened, but Wes Unseld passed away.
Died today.
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you? And he's before my time. But what's your memory of him? Obviously, I'm aware of him, and I know. He's a Hall of Famer, and I can read his stats and all of that. But just a thought on him as a player.
Giant barrel chest, okay? Used to set screens that could fell a Humvee. And he threw the best two-handed outlet pass in the NBA. Just try to get around him. I mean, look at some footage of this guy. His rear end, you could show driving movies on it. So he was just a big guy, and when he grabbed the rebound, he could turn and hit that outlet man with a pass right on the mark. Got it out fast, triggered the fast break, and when he'd go in the low post, you know, he was only 6'8", and he played at Louisville. He was only 6'8", but he weighed like 240 and was just massive. I don't know how you kept him from backing you down. And when the Washington Bullets, now they're the Wizards, of course, had him and Elvin Hayes, one of the most underrated players in NBA history, on the same team. And I think he's one of the five people in NCAA history to average 20 points and 20 rebounds for a career. You can double check me on that. If he didn't do it, he was awful close. Putting those two together in the same front court was really, really tough to deal with because Hayes could score so many ways and Unsel was just a brick wall down low.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, Michael, but, you know, I always think of, like, Daryl Dawkins. When he shattered that backboard, to me, that was so monumental. But who's your favorite big guy in the NBA?
It's Daryl Dawkins was my favorite. Well, Wilt's my guy. I mean, I'm a Wilt guy. It pained me. I was only 7, so I don't remember this, but reading about it later in 69 when he begged off in the final, the 7th game against the Celtics, he got a little injured and he stayed out. That was a tough one for us Wilt guys. But Darryl Dawkins is my favorite player. I got a bobblehead of him right there. Watching him when he played for the Sixers, they used to have those warm-up pants with the snaps all the way down the side. And, you know, he'd get called on to go in a game. He'd pull at the waistband, and the things would just deteriorate all the way down the leg. He's 6'11", but all the snaps came out because he was so strong. And I'll tell you a quick story. Dawkins, I'm driving up the New Jersey Turnpike one time. A brown Mercedes pulls up next to me. I look into the driver's side window, and there's nobody there. And I'm like, what the? It's a ghost car. But then I realize Dawkins is driving it. He's got the seat reclined so far that he's looking at me out the back driver's side window. He puts a smile on his face, and he just takes off up the turnpike. I catch up to him, give him a smile, and I pass him. We're doing like 95 back and forth up the turnpike. Every time he caught up to me, he smiled at me and went a little further up. Then I'd catch up to him. Finally, he hit the gas and blew me away. But that was about a 15-minute excursion, high-speed excursion. Was a heck of a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Hey, Ombre, I'm glad you're talking basketball, man. I'm a big basketball fan, and you know, with the Jordan documentary that came out, or excuse me, the Bulls Last Dance documentary that came out, you know, I got a different perspective of the Bulls and just the 90s in general when it came to basketball. If Jordan doesn't retire and go play basketball, go play baseball, do you think the Bulls pull off 8 to 9 championships?
I don't think they do, because listening to him talk about how difficult the first third one was, and then the way they talked about the second, third one, that would have been really difficult. When the Celtics won their 9 straight, and let me see, it was 50, so they won 57 was the first, they lost 58, then 59 is 66. However many of that, I got to take my fingers and my shoes off. I think that was 8. They were playing in an NBA that had like 8 or 9 teams. The playoffs were 2 or 3 rounds. In order to go through what, to win 8 in a row, required such an incredible amount of focus and effort, and I don't think they would have been able to do it. It's if they might have won the 2 when he was, you know, the one when he was gone, and then he, you know, he would have been there for the second one rather than being out of shape and not really ready to play. They might have won 5, they might have won 6. I don't think they do 8. And Pat Riley told me something one time about the Warriors when they were in their dynasty mode. This is just not that long ago. I said, I don't see how they lose. He goes, they're going to lose. He said, everybody loses. It always happens. Something happens. People catch up with them. Somebody gets hurt. Somebody leaves. So who knows whether they would have been able to keep everybody happy the whole time.
Hey, Michael, quickly, we're up against the break, but I got to ask you on the heels of that, the Lance Armstrong documentary, did you watch that at all?
No, none of it. I have tremendous contempt for that guy. I was afraid that it was going to be, I'll watch it at some point if it's not sanitized. Did they really go after him?
No.
Did they make him out to be the real piece of you-know-what that he is?
He does not come off well in my eyes. He does not seem like a great guy. And I was going to ask, because somebody posed the question in there, is he a bad guy who's done good things or a good guy who's done bad things? Because the results of his Livestrong Foundation are pretty undeniable. The amount of money raised and him deferring some paydays directly to that, things like that. So obviously, certainly good deeds, but the rest of his career, how he treated people and things like that, really a creep, and they didn't really sanitize it. I don't think he came out of it smelling like a rose. It wasn't a redemption program by any stretch, but it was just an interesting question. Is that a good guy who's done bad things or a bad guy who's done some good things?
I think he's a bad guy who did good things, because he hid behind the whole Livestrong thing while he was juicing like crazy and created this image of the person who was a great guy, a winning guy. Look, he overcame cancer, and I give him tremendous credit for that. I hope that I never have to deal with that. And I salute anybody who's fighting it or has fought it. But he created this image of himself based around the success he was having cycling. And while he did bring hope to people and he did raise a lot of money, I think that the cynicism around it was just a little too much for me to take.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley, with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You can follow him on Twitter at Daily Hombre. That's where you can interact at your own risk, as I tell you. Michael, stay safe out there. We'll do it again next week.
Social distance, suckers.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
All right, great stuff from Michael as usual. A reminder, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or local athlete impacted by the crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Use it on Twitter or Facebook. Share their story and why they're your hometown hero. Coming up, Kurt Warner had some praise and criticism for Russell Wilson on John Clayton's show today. Was it valid? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more. Michael Bumpus in this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and More right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Bumpus in for the rest of the week, sitting in for the vacationing Jim Moore. A reminder that you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. You can take us with you if you're outside enjoying weather or you want to listen to the podcast or text, whatever you want to do. You can do it all from the app. So there you go. It's free, and it's the right price. Meanwhile, Kurt Warner was a guest of the John Clayton show today, the Hall of Famer that is Kurt Warner, who's apparently he's not always been sold on Russell Wilson, and we had a cut, and apparently it's not in the system, where he's talking about Russell. He still has some work to do, he feels like. And I guess in a certain context, he's right. Nobody's perfect. Every quarterback out there can improve on something. It feels like for whatever reason, he's been a little harder on Russell than others. Cut number 11, he ranks the rest of the NFC West quarterbacks.
When you got the next three guys, I mean, we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, Jared Goff had an unbelievable year 2 years ago, and then Jimmy has a great year last year, and, you know, Kyler wins Rookie of the Year. You know, I would probably put him in that reign again. I would probably put Jimmy second, and then Jared Goff third, and Kyler still at fourth, and just until I see the growth he makes in his second year. But I'm excited about that division and watching that division play out. I think all those teams are going to be competitive. They've all got quarterbacks that have shown that they can play at an extremely high level. It's going to be a fun division to watch.
So he's got Russell first in the pecking order. And we did this before, Dave, you and me and Jim, we talked about it. Bump, I'm curious what your rankings would be. I've got them similar. I've got Goff and Garoppolo switched. I've got, obviously, Russell to me is head and shoulders above, just in terms of who they are currently, what they've accomplished to this point. It's not that I think Murray is not better than these other guys, but he's had 1 year under his belt. So he has the other two have been to Super Bowls. So I'd have to go Goff second, Garoppolo third, Murray fourth, behind Russell sitting in the one spot. How would you rank him?
Yeah, I would go Russell first. I would go Jimmy second. I go Goff third, and I go Kyler fourth. I think Kyler has obviously the most potential out of these guys because he's the youngest. I think by mid-season in 2020, he's going to pass up either Jimmy or Jared for sure.
Yeah, I think that Garoppolo probably, I feel like, has the least upside. I'm not sure if you guys feel that way or not, but I feel like, I don't want to say he's like a system guy or anything, but, you know, he made some good throws. But, I mean, remember the NFC Championship game? I think he went 6 for 8 in that game. It was just, he's not asked to do that much. He's got such a good running game, and I feel like Shanahan has a really good handle on play calling. So, I feel like, and I don't want it to be this way, but I feel like within the next couple of years, Kyler Murray could be second to Russ. But Russ is by far the most steady, solid as far as winning and just his completion percentage and lack of interceptions. I just think he's far and away in the division ahead of everybody else. And again, Kyler Murray is just so full of, you know, potential. And, you know, we'll just see what kind of, I'll say this, you know, the thing about him that I had heard was that he wasn't a great teammate at Oklahoma to his teammates there, and that, that he was maybe not much of a leader, but, he apparently talked to a few people down in Arizona when we did our Thursday night show bump. You know, what was that, Seahawks Weekly? Shoot, yeah. You know, they were saying good things about him, and, that he's developing into a good leader.
Yeah, I had heard those same things about, you know, there might be an attitude issue and things like that. And boy, last year, if you're a Cardinals fan, you've got to be excited about the potential of this kid. But again, my rankings are based on what each has accomplished to this very point. He just doesn't have any time under his belt. So that's why he'd be in that spot. But I agree with you. I think he's got more potential than the other two, probably put together, as a matter of fact. We found the other cut. Here's Kurt Warner again on with John Clayton today, talking about Russell Wilson, cut number 10.
You know, he's up there as well. And, you know, for me with Russell is that, you know, I don't know if I've appreciated Russell, you know, kind of like I was talking about with Deshaun Watson, appreciating him enough over the last few years. And, you know, because a lot of times I see the athleticism and I see the playmaking and all that stuff. I mean, just jumps off the page to you. But having been a guy that played the game inside the pocket, you know, I'm always looking for these guys to develop a little bit better in the pocket. And maybe not holding them in as high regard as they develop as a pocket passer. But I think he's one of the greatest winners that our game has. And that, to me, should supersede anything in terms of how you play the quarterback position. It's how do you get your team to play around you, and how do you give your team a chance to win every time out? And nobody does that better than Russell Wilson. And so I've come to appreciate just more of who he is as a you know, in its entirety as a quarterback, even though I think there's still some work to be done inside the pocket and on schedule and some of those things. If he could develop that a little bit better to go along with everything else he brings to the table, I mean, it would be incredible to watch.
Yeah, except that I know we've looked at his numbers in the pocket. They've got passer ratings when he breaks outside the pocket. They got passer ratings inside the pocket. His numbers are off the charts pretty much everywhere. So I guess my question would have been, you know, what are you seeing when he's in the pocket? What is it you're not seeing? Because he's pretty adept and pretty efficient no matter where he's at. He does roll out a lot. He's had some pretty suspect O-lines. So if he doesn't roll out, he's going to take a beating. But I feel like that's a bit of a misnomer. I don't feel like he struggles in the pocket.
Yeah, well, remember there was that one year where I think it was 2015 where he just didn't leave the pocket and had something like 88% completion percentage in the times that he was, it was over like a 5 or 6 game streak. So yeah, he's just getting better and better. So yeah, I just think, and Russ to me, I mean, the durability is just amazing to me. I don't know about you, Bob. That's the one thing whenever I look at players, I can't stop myself from talking about it. When you find a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, or remember Carlos Dansby playing linebacker. Yeah. I mean, the guy over like 12, 13 years has missed like 4 games. Russ has missed 0, man. It's amazing. It's uncanny how he's so durable, and that allows him in the off season. You know, that's a huge thing. You don't have to rehabilitate any injuries in the off season. You can just work on your game. I mean, it doesn't take any time away from that. And it just seems like Russell does something every year that gets better and better and better. And I thought last year the best thing was his leadership and his ability to take a team over. And basically, you know, once all those, you know, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, those guys were gone, that he's been able to really put his stamp, his personality on this team.
Yeah, I mean, you're only as good as you are available, right? In the NFL, you're going to get injured. You know, it's a matter of time. It's just how severe is the injury and how do you respond from that? And Russell Wilson has done a good job taking care of his body. And, you know, I hear Kurt Warner, I hear his comments, and I respect the dude, Super Bowl champion, Hall of Fame. Like, I mean, he knows way more football than I know. But I also think that he is getting caught up in the play calling of the Seahawks as well. Like when the Hawks drop back and Russell has to do your traditional five-set drop or 90 protection, whatever you want to call it in your football terms, most of those plays are slow developing, big plays down the field. So he's got to hold the ball. Then you put an offensive line in front of him that, you know, has a different guard this week, a different tackle that week. There's no continuity there. So there are a lot of things that gives the perception, I feel like, that – he's holding on to the ball and that he's not on time. At times, does he hold on to the ball? For sure. But I think that over the years, he's begun to limit that. And I think last year was his best year when it came to that. But when you're in an offense to where they ask you to fake zone left, boot out to the right, you're blind to the DN, you have no idea if he bit on the run or not. Now get your eyes down the field and make a decision. It takes some time for that to happen. But again, Kurt Warner knows what he's talking about, so I'm gonna take what he says. But I also think that Russell Wilson's play, he's a product of what his offense is and what his personnel is.
Good stuff. All right, coming up, George Kittle. We talked about the idea that he's going to go past the tight end market. He's going to look to be paid as something better than a tight end. Should Seahawks fans want him to? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Michael Bumpus in with us today and the rest of the week, sitting in for the vacationing Jim Moore here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We talked about this before. George Kittle, his agent coming out saying, I'm not trying to, you know, break the tight end market, so to speak. He's out there badly. It's not a tight end contract. It's a George Kittle contract, which implies he's looking for the biggest dollars, and he deserves it. I mean, he's 26 years old. This guy is an everything guy, a great blocker, a great run after the catch guy. And Bump, I know you've got some stats on him, comparing him to a really good wide receiver who was just paid $100 million. But more importantly, you're hoping he gets the huge deal, or at least is attempting to get the huge deal. Why?
Yeah, if you mentioned George Kittle, he's the best tight end in the league, hands down. But if he gets a huge deal, I think he's not a 49er next year, because I feel like there's a chance the Niners aren't going to be who they were last year. And you know how it goes. You got to move guys around. You got to bring guys in. And if his agent resets the market and gets around 16, 17 million, which I think I saw what his market value was on Sports Track, I think that he's not a 49er. And I think he should get paid that way. I mean, the guy, he's great in the run game. He's a good blocker. He blocks probably the most athletic guys on the football field at that DN spot. That's where a lot of the money's going on defense. And then he's broken 25 tackles after he's caught the football. The only two other guys who have done better than that are McCaffrey and Kamara, two of the slipperiest guys in the league. So I think he's the best in the league. I think he should be paid that way. And if he is paid that way, he resets the market. That's going to put the Niners in a bind and really make them make tough decisions for their franchise. And I also think that Jimmy might be gone in a couple of years if he doesn't perform at a higher level and get them over the hump. So a lot of things are happening in San Fran, and you add George Kittle to the mix, there's going to be some tough decisions being made here in a year or so.
Yeah, well, I'd say there's good news, bad news there. I agree with you, Bump, especially on all of the extra things that tight ends do, really. And it seemed like it was like 2007, 8, 9, in that there was a lull period where, you know, there weren't a lot of great tight ends. And, you know, it was kind of a position that was starting to kind of go away a little bit, kind of like fullback. And it just made this huge comeback, because we talked about this yesterday. The guys in Baltimore, you know, they have that Hurst kid. They have a kid named Mark Andrews. I mean, there's some really good tight ends right now in the league. The bad news, I would say, though, is if he does get that big deal, I feel like Will Dissly is that kind of player. I think Kittle probably has a little bit more explosiveness. You know, you saw that run where the guy's dragging his on his face mask. But, man, he... Will Dissly is a really, really good blocker. I mean, he's far above average. And then I just the thing that surprised me was his hands. The catch I think about from last year is the one over his shoulder that he kind of caught off of his face mask against the Rams in the home game on Thursday night. So it could mean that, yeah, now all of a sudden you're going to, you know, have to maybe pay a guy like Will Dissly a lot of money. But I hope you're right that he does leave, because I don't want to see George Kittle in this division anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge expectation for Disley just based on what he's not been able to do, and that's stay healthy. I mean, when he's healthy, man, he's looked really good. But, you know, I think you guys have said it. I know Brock has said it. You know, availability is a skill in this league. And we've talked about it with other players who have C.J. Procise. We talked about it for years with him. You know, he had a couple of moments where you looked at it and said, man, this guy has got some skills. He's got some elusiveness and a great receiver out of the bat, all these great things he can do. He just couldn't stay. He couldn't keep it together physically for whatever reason, not his fault. And you just hope Disley's just been really unfortunate. You hope it's not a chronic thing. And it's, you know, these have been serious injuries. It's not like, oh, he's got a nagging hamstring or he's got a got a calf muscle thing going or any of those. It doesn't seem like anything like that. And maybe it's just been really poor luck, but you still have that in the back of your mind. Can he be available? He seems to have the tools. He was you're right about his blocking, Dave. In fact, that's all we heard when they drafted him. We didn't really hear much about him in the way of being a pass catcher. It was more about him being one of the best blocking tight ends coming out of college that year. And then the pass catching seemed to catch everybody off by surprise. Like, oh my goodness, look how good he is at that. I was expecting somebody to be a de facto offensive lineman almost because he was so good at blocking. So he was a pleasant surprise, but you still have that nagging thought, can he just be there? Can he be available?
Yeah, gotta be available. There's no denying what Disley brings to the table, and you hit on it, Bob. I mean, when he got picked up by the Hawks, everyone expecting him to be a blocker, ends up leading the team in touchdowns, I think, the first 3 or 4 weeks. And it's all contingent on how healthy he is. Now, the Hawks are sitting down and waiting for him to be healthy. They brought in a kid named Kobe Parkinson, who I feel like is a great great receiving tight end. I'm not sure about his blocking. I didn't really break him down in that sense. But as far as catching the football, I think he's okay. And what helps tight ends in this system is just the play action. You know, you can have a decent tight end who's okay at blocking, but once they get that defensive line to bite or that linebacker crew to bite on a play, man, you're wide open. You're going to make plays. So there's going to be some competition at that tight end spot with Greg Olsen. But if Disley can come back and be healthy, this team might have one of the best tight end cores out there if Kobe Parkinson performs the way I think he's capable of.
Do we all feel like we're going to say goodbye to Luke Wilson?
I don't want to. But man,
I know we love him. You couldn't find a more engaging, nice guy who's really entertaining and fun to talk to, and just humble. I mean, he's just a good dude, man. And he's obviously great in the locker room. The team loves him. But Bump just brought it up. I mean, the numbers. You know, the fact that they Parkinson and Olsen, and if Disley's healthy, it just feels like it just doesn't set up well for him.
Yeah, well, and then they got Steven Sullivan, who, you know, is a huge project.
Right.
You know, that was a guy
that they moved
was
up
kind
to
of
take.
A reach.
They moved back into the draft to take.
All right. Well, and then the other, remember the Tyler Mabry that we looked at, the free agent kid out of Maryland. He spent 4 years at Buffalo, went to Maryland to bet on himself, didn't quite have the year that he wanted. Well, he obviously didn't because he thought he was going to get drafted higher and didn't, but didn't complain about it. And he's a really good blocker. So it'll be interesting to watch that group, but I feel really good about the tight end group. The depth there, everything, it's going to be very competitive. You know, the one thing I was going to say, you know, people are texting in about, you know, Will Disley spraining his wrist if he opened a jar of spaghetti sauce and, you know, all that stuff. But look, I think, you know, the one thing that did bother me is neither of those were these just horrible looking, you know, I mean, the one in Cleveland was so weird. It was just hard to tell how he, you know, tore his Achilles, and it was kind of that way over on the sidelines in the Arizona game when he tore his patellar tendon. But, you know, I guess Pete says that he's killing it. The other thing I would say is after having that that patellar tendon surgery and rehabbing it, there were so many, especially in the Arizona game, there's so many DBs just diving at his knees. And he took some huge shots on those knees, and he wasn't affected by it, because that, for me, Bump, that was the one thing, the psychological part. I mean, once you come back and get your strength back and everything, that's one thing. But the other thing is sometimes you're, you know, kind of looking to the side or you're looking over your shoulder a lot of times, you know, worried about contact. I didn't see that from Dis.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. And that mental aspect is real. I broke a bone in my foot and I go back to practice and it just doesn't feel right. I literally walked off the field and go to the trainer. I go, look, take me back. Let's do some more x-rays and show me that my foot is fine. You know, before I was like, okay, I can put my foot in the ground and go that way. And then for him, for Disley to come back from an injury and have another one, you hear the way he's talking. Mentally, he's tough. Now it's just all about what can the body handle. Eventually, it breaks down on you. I'm hoping that's not the case for the guy, young dude. Great future if he's healthy. But you have to be prepared for those situations, and I think the Hawks are.
All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
There's learning happening on this show every single day, and I think maybe it was ratcheted up a bit with the presence of Michael Bumpus, no doubt. What did we learn today, DJ?
First, we learned the days are just starting to blend together right now.
Yeah, you know, for me, I feel like it's getting closer because, you know, we talked about this, what was almost a week ago when Blake Snell, or maybe that was, I mean, the days blend together, for God's sake. Yeah. When you wear shorts every day, shorts and a t-shirt every day.
And so, your hair is down to the middle of your back.
Yeah.
You're right, Dave. The days do blend together. I have to look at my phone all the time. Is it Tuesday? Is it when? What is it? I have no idea.
I know. Yeah. Well, and yeah, just well. Remember today earlier, I had to ask you. Yeah, what's the white bearded receiver for the Patriots?
Yeah. I mean, it was, Julian Edelman.
I feel like I got to do something to keep my mind sharp, man. I've been doing lots of yard work. You talked about scooping poop. You know, I mean, maybe I got to find some better things. Maybe I should start doing puzzles or something, crossword puzzles or something. Jeez.
I Bump, I don't know about you, but I would think scooping poop would be the thing to keep your mind the sharpest, but I could be wrong about that.
Scooping poop. Gotta love the daddy duties, Dave. Gotta love it.
What else we learned, DJ?
Well, speaking of scooping poop, we learned a little bit more about Dave's dog.
By the way, my dog is just a machine. He's a poop machine, man. I picked up 6 piles yesterday from one day.
Wow.
But, yeah. Anyway, that was really important. Is he
a poop machine or you're just home? Is he a poop machine or you're just home more often to pick up the poop?
No, it's just I'm noticing these things more often. One time I scooped up 105 because I let it go for like 3 weeks. Yeah, I counted.
Could you see
them,
the grass? That's so. Just a field of poop with a few straggler blades of grass popping up at that point, man. That's just nothing but landmines.
Well, I this is really exciting, what I'm about to tell you. But I took up all the like bark that was in all the beds, and I wheelbarrowed it over to the side, and I put it over there. So Hoover, when I let him out the back slider, all I have to do is say, go to the side, and he'll trot right over there. I trained him to do that, so he's doing it. So at least it's not in the grass anyway, Bob. Every once in a while, he gets lazy, but... Yeah, it's not like my entire lawn is covered with dog poop. I'm not a hillbilly, Bob.
Do you have pets, Bump?
Yeah, I have a sweet little labradoodle, and I have kids. My son's 10, my other son's 8. They're on poop patrol. I do not touch poop in the backyard, so I feel for you, Dave.
See, you guys, I live in the city, which means I don't have a yard, which means I take him out and I follow him around with a plastic bag on my hand so I can pick it up as soon as he's done. And yeah, 6 times a day. I don't think that's ever happened with him. He's a 2 to 3 time a day guy, Frank is.
Does that bother you? I can't stand that. Like, I know that there's a bag between me and the poop, but just picking it up with my aunt. Remember that Seinfeld bit where he said if some alien came from another planet, they'd think that the dogs were in charge because the humans are following them around picking up their excrement? I can't do it. I got to bring like a little shovel or something.
Dave, you've known me a long time now. I think you know it bothers me. It's with my germophobia and everything. It's literally my least favorite thing to do, but it's better outside than in my house. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned about a little preview of what mic'd up players in the NFL could sound like.
A lot of it is just screaming and yelling. I remember calling a guy, get your hands off me, you fat mother blow up. And then he looks at me, and the guy weighed like 400 pounds. And he goes, who are you talking to? I go, who do you think I'm talking to? Look at you. Yeah, so I mean.
You have any mirrors in your house?
There's lots of that kind of stuff going on. Yeah.
See, Dave, I think you guys, you and Bump, you guys have been out there in the trenches, on the field, so maybe you're a little numb to it. For the rest of us, that stuff would be gold. I know you don't think it's funny or whatever, but just even the yelling back and forth, I think fans would love it. They would love that stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because, Bump, you being a coach, I mean, and probably a lot of your high school games, people could hear what you're saying, but, you know, you kind of have to be careful all of a sudden, right? You can't say what you normally say if everything's being heard, right?
Nah, you, I definitely couldn't go as hard as I did on a couple of referees if I was mic'd up and everyone could hear. They would think that, you know, there's always a point in the game where you just lose your stuff, you know what I mean? And then you have to reel it back in. So that one moment where you lose your stuff will live forever on the internet. The internet is undefeated, so you have to keep your cool for sure.
Oh, I'm telling you guys, that stuff is gold to the rest of us. We would all love to hear it. And somebody had the idea on the text line. Maybe they could make it a pay-per-view. They could mic it up, but it doesn't air on the broadcast. But you could do a pay-per-view where you get this unedited, unvarnished look. But I do think El Hombre brought up a good point about, man, there are some things said out there probably that could change the way people view a player, right? So I think that was a very good point, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I would not want to hear is Philip Rivers. I don't want to hear him mic'd up or what he has to say. Because
aren't you kind of curious since he's not cursing?
Talk noise.
Aren't you kind of curious what's coming out of his mouth?
I'm not. I'm disgusted by that.
I would love it. How do you talk that much trash and you don't curse? I would have to see that. That's impressive.
Yeah. I have to admit, as much as he's got a really, really punchable face, I am curious to hear what that sounds like. Just a G-rated version of smack talk to me is kind of a curiosity. did we learn anything else, DJ?
Yeah, last thing here, we learned the origin of the Schwantago.
All right, Schwantago, I got a question for you.
Yo,
here we go.
I've been Schwantago since 2007. I don't want to hear it.
See, now you have to tell Bumpus what it is, because he was egged on to call you that, and it's Schwantago. He doesn't know what it is.
Schwantago, okay.
All right, every Thanksgiving, my buddies and I, this game is now 45 years old, goes back to the mid-70s, and my buddies and I play a touch football game on Thanksgiving. It's the Turkey Bowl. We gave out a pink toilet seat. We give out a pink toilet seat to the least valuable player on the losing team, as voted by the winners. And I have not been Schwantago since 2007, so I don't want to hear it.
So there you go, Bump.
You got to set me up for that. You set me up for that one, huh?
I just love his response. I haven't been there since 2007. I don't want to hear it.
Well, you know, Michael, I don't know if you know this. I've never seen El Diablo is what I call him sometimes, El Hombre, Michael Bradley. I've never seen him. I don't know what he looks like. I have no idea, and I don't want to know. I don't want to know until the point. So, and I don't know if you know what he looks like either, Bump, but I would encourage you to play along with me, that just don't look him up. Don't try to see. And someday he's going to come out here. Isn't he, Bob? Are we going to see him out here sometime?
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. And I've made the claim to Dave that if we're out there at Edgar's Cantina or doing a broadcast somewhere out in public, and he's in the audience there somewhere, if there's 100 people there, I'd give Dave 10 guesses, and I'm not sure he would be able to identify him. Wow.
I'm intrigued by that. I have a picture of it in my mind. I should get like a police sketch artist or something and describe him too.
I would love to see that. That would be an awesome.
I feel
bit.
Like he looks like Danny O'Neill, kind of. I get like a Danny O'Neill type feel to him. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think he has dark hair, but don't say anything, Bob. But I've got like a picture. There's like an actor, a guy on TV. I'll figure out who it is that I think he looks like. But he was in good spirits today. It was fun.
Yeah, he's always entertaining, always good stuff. All right, that does it for us. Want to thank our guest today, John Clayton, and the aforementioned El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, just head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, scroll down to our picture, and click there. It's right there waiting for you each and every day. Great job, Michael. We look forward to the rest of the week. Michael in for the vacationing Jim Moore. Great job by DJ back at the station. A lot of technical issues happening today with and Mora as well. So we held it together. We got through it.
Never heard DJ swear so much.
I know. We'll do a pay-per-view of him mic'd up. That'll be good. But we'll do it again tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Oh, shut up. What are you complaining about?